The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
I'm delighted to welcome All-Ireland winner with Armagh, Aidan O'Rourke, to the show. Good morning to you, Aidan.
Morning.
There's a couple of things we want to touch on this morning. The first thing, I guess, is just the big story over the past couple of days, the Monaghan situation, the Dublin situation, a 12-week ban being handed down to the managers. It looks like the GAA is going to take the same decision that the county boards took themselves. Is that fair enough in your view?
Yeah, listen, I suppose if you benchmark it against what happened previously with Down and Cork, Paddy Talley got 8 weeks. And I suppose this can be viewed as an escalation or a larger breach of protocols or regulations. So 12 weeks is probably what would be expected. I know there was a PR arm to this in terms of the county boards been seen to take preemptive strikes, but the GAA are always going to take control of the disciplinary side of these things.
Yeah, like, I mean, for the idea that this would actually put the brakes in the season, that was probably a bit of an overreaction, was it, over the past week?
I would have thought so. I mean, you need to take this in context around, you know, where we are socially and what the feeling on the ground is. I think the GAA, not unlike the government, I suppose, have lost the room a little bit with the current restrictions with regard to outdoor activity. And I'm not sure there's a massive appetite for much of the book being thrown at Dublin and Monaghan in this instance at the moment.
What is the main reason why they've lost the room, in your opinion?
Well, if you take a step back from the GAA and look at this in a sporting context, I mean, at the moment I'm involved with coaching at a variety of levels, like, but in particular juvenile underage would be my main focus. And if you take a step back and see what other countries are doing, we're very much have a third world approach here to outdoor sport. I mean, if you look at the science and research, outdoor sport should have been mandated months ago. It's with what's happening in other jurisdictions. It is safe to do. There's a frustration around all of that because we're looking on. We see what has been discovered about the transmission of this virus internationally, and we're still in the last spring restrictions. So I suppose in that context, there's a huge amount of frustration around where we are and the lack of progress that's out there around sport. And we're moving into a world here where everything is going to be outdoors, where our habits and our routines are going to be built around outdoor activity. We should have been getting ahead of the curve with this, and instead, here we are, 12 months and more later, still operating under these draconian public health regulations.
Is it fair to say that your frustration mostly lies with not amateur players, everybody's amateur in the GAA, but maybe underage players and children more so than the elite players, because obviously that they've had to toe that line carefully, the GAA, it seems, about requesting elite status or getting back because of maybe the brakes being put on them a bit last year?
No, I think there's a two-pronged situation here. Obviously, the youth sport thing is a huge frustration for a massive amount of people. And then, I suppose, as a parent, I would have felt that frustration keenly over the last 4 or 5 months in particular, when we see other parts of the world moving on. And there has been the opportunity to reach down and try and support kids, give them outdoor sport back in a safe environment where it can be controlled. And, I mean, I'm like a broken record for anybody who knows me on this. The science supports that. And as a society, that we didn't take that opportunity to support young, vulnerable people is a huge frustration that'll stay with me for forever, probably. Within all of that, I think sporting bodies, and in particular the GAA, who class themselves as a community organisation first and foremost, that they haven't given a voice to kids in this, for me, is my allegiance to and involvement with the GAA will forever be marked by their lack of action on this. But if you want to focus on the second prong of this, the inter-county side things, I mean, again, that's our own doing. GAA status was established for inter-county activity, and it was let go by the GAA for their own reasons. They'll have to explain that, those themselves. And you have the anomaly here where elite status remains for inter-county teams in the north. So, for example, when the Down training incident occurred, somebody called the PSNI. PSNI turned up and acknowledged that this was an elite team training and nothing to see here, but obviously fell foul of the GAA's own rules and regulations. So elite status should still be there. There's no reason why not. I'm reading articles this morning about, you know, the curtailed season because of the lack of time. That's the GAA's own doing. National League could have gone ahead in its scheduled window, and we could have been planning in detail for the club season now. And obviously, in my view, we should be further ahead with that, but we could have been detailing out a club season. And again, the club player is at the back of the queue with all of this. I mean, the GAA seems to think when they make pronouncements that everybody's waiting on tenterhooks to hear when the National Leagues and Championships are starting. That's not the case for the vast majority of membership. We want to know when everybody can get involved. And inter-county, yes, is the jewel in the crown and very important. And where everybody loves to have those role models and people to look up to, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Yeah, like when it comes to that elite status then slipping through the fingers of the GAA, it's probably not just on them, is it? Like, just to counter that a little bit, like there's probably a huge political aspect to it as well. Like, I remember Micheál Martin coming out in February saying that they just wanted to keep activity levels low in society. And I think maybe that point around activity around GAA grounds or whatever it may be was something that the government had been acutely aware of. And I think they'd been acutely aware of the GAA and maybe some of the celebrations that they'd seen after club games last year. That for all we know, the GAA had been lobbying hard for this. And I guess the political pressure that came back on them was, no, you're not getting this.
Well, I suppose I'm not sure where you're getting your information from on that one, but that's not my understanding. The GAA had an opportunity to retain elite status if they had wished, but didn't push the buttons on that. I mean, all of this is behind doors, so closed doors, so we're not going to be able to bear all that out. I'd really love them to set out exactly why elite status, as you say, slipped through their fingers last year and why it wasn't possible in the springtime. Because as a GAA man, first and foremost, but involved more broadly in sport professionally, I am involved in facilitating elite sport as the months have ticked on. I look at other sports having their icons and role models on the TV. I look at other athletes down the tiers who aren't quite at the top level yet, still with elite status, and I scratch my head as to why the GAA's flagship competitions don't go ahead. Because remember, during lockdown too, inter-county activity was many people's saviour here. You know, whenever the championship was able to kick in last autumn, it made a huge difference to us as a society. I mean, obviously I'm embedded in sport, but, you know, to have that, have those games to look forward to at the weekend was a massive thing for people who are involved in the GAA at all levels. And we've been deprived of that now for months. And, you know, that it was at our own hand is a huge frustration.
Just in relation to the, I mean, like you said, we don't know. There could be a lot of conversations going on behind the scenes that Croke Park that we're not privy to. And that, you know, we may find out about over the course of time. So it's important to say that, obviously, in the context of having nobody from the GAA directly on the line as well. What would you like to see in terms of you're clearly moved by a lack of action over the last number of months? What would you like to see is in terms of an ideal outcome here? I know there's been like SOPs to return to play in terms of, like, you know, we can do some training, there can't be any contact. What would you see at this juncture now, a year, a bit more into this thing, that would be a good solution to get kids and to get people back playing?
A very simple answer to that: immediate return to sport at all levels, outdoors, through regulated sports clubs. I mean, that's pretty simple as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you have a couple of anomalies here. in the north, obviously, everybody is back this coming Monday. It's not non-contact. It's everybody's back in groups of 15. And then 2 weeks later, kids only are back in the 26th from Monday the 29th or whatever that Monday is. So even if you take that, and you, I suppose I'm involved in sports, so I'm looking at international best practice all the time. Non-contact is an anomaly. It makes absolutely no difference, and putting that restriction on has no health benefit or no impact on the transmission of the virus. That's a early 2020 view, whenever we were obviously very cautious, necessarily so, about how we resume. Also, groups of 15, there's nothing, show me the data that supports that, minimizing the risk on the transmission of the virus. So, I mean, you may detect that at this stage, I've sort of gone past the point of using softer language and tipping my hat to people, because, I mean, this is a no-brainer. I mean, the opportunity this presents to people who are involved in sport to get out, do something healthy, build good habits around their lifestyle. I mean, there's no downside to this. The argument from those who are making it at the other end is that we can't trust people. You know, we can't trust people to go to their local soccer or GA club and not share a car. We can't trust them not to use the dressing rooms. We can't trust them generally. And that's a social comment, I suppose, on the people we've elected. But for me, in particular, as for the GAA, as first and foremost a community organisation, I do trust people. I saw the protocols that were built last summer and autumn. I saw how safely sport was delivered. I've seen the research internationally that shows no zero transmission for during the playing of sport outdoors. So, I mean, I'm beyond the point of saying, I hope we get there in the next few weeks. That's nonsense. We should be there already. And the world has gone mad.
Can you explain then as well, Aidan, just for people who might be coming to this conversation new, and I know you say you're like a broken record on this, but people might be, will be listening to you for the first time quite a bit this morning. When it comes to what people under the age of 18, say, have been missing out on for the last year, when you've actually dug into the science of this, when you've balanced the benefits of coming back versus the negatives of coming back, what are the benefits that those children have missed out on over the past couple of months in particular?
Well, I suppose those benefits will be fairly obvious to any parent who has a child involved in sport. There's a judicial review actually ongoing in the north, which looks at the impact of depriving kids of sport outdoors during the pandemic, and looks at just how much of an overreach that has been. The benefit of sport, I mean, I've seen instances in my own social circle of kids' personalities disappearing, their behaviour changing. Kids are within their own family group for long periods of time. And remember now, with small periods off, we're in this more than 12 months. So kids adapt okay, they are adaptable or whatever. But the benefits of being outside, being healthy, having that structure in their week, being able to socialise with their friends for those two or three times a week when they're down at the pitch, just having that those social connections are massive to where kids are in terms of development. And the pandemic of physical and mental health that we have coming down the track here, which has been pushed back and pushed back, is going to be probably more difficult to deal with in this country. And it's not this than the pandemic. It's not just kids. You know, I think we're all familiar with the numbers rising in terms of mental health issues in the country, where suicide rates are. I mean, there has to be a balance when you look at the public health good here. And not for one minute am I dismissing the danger of COVID and the impact it can have on the vulnerable. But there comes a point where we have to move on. We have to learn to live outdoors more than indoors. And we're well past that point.
Yeah, I think there's been a distinct lack of leadership in that regard as well, in terms of that return to getting people outdoors, to getting them involved in sport in whatever shape or form that might be. And I think when, particularly in this country, we've a minister, a quasi-minister for sport, who's more interested in publishing press releases to, you know, say the obvious thing about what everybody's thinking about the Monaghan stuff over the last week and the Dublin stuff, get the press release out and tell everybody how outraged you are about it, but refuse to come on a show like this, despite several requests from him to come on and discuss topics like this over the last 6 months. I think we get a good insight into what that leadership is about. But look, maybe he'll respond positively to one of the requests at some point over the next little while. The fixture list obviously came out yesterday, and I know that obviously it wasn't the from a Croke Park point of view, I'm sure that they looked at events over the that were breaking overnight and had their head in their hands over it. But look, at that notwithstanding, it's it is some positive news in terms of giving us all a bit of a breather and something to look forward to. What have you made of the revised fixture list?
Yeah, listen, given the time frames, it's probably what fits best. It's not ideal by any means, and I'll not go back over the ground that we've covered, that, you know, we've missed a huge opportunity to shop window our games again this year. But listen, it gives somebody, or it gives everybody, games in the calendar to look forward to. I'm sure county players are hugely frustrated. Remember, playing inter-county football or hurling is a very small window, and two of, I don't know what the average is, probably 5 or 7 years, two of those years for a lot of people are now going to be badly impacted. So they're probably very keen to get out there and get at it, notwithstanding teams that have been doing a bit, obviously, at this point. But the fact that we have games and the beginning of a calendar is very positive.
When it comes to that football season then, Aidan, like, I mean, you look at last season and this season, there are going to be teams maybe who get two games in championship over the course of 2 years, not having a back door. I think the line is in one of the newspapers this morning that I think all the Division 4 teams ended up losing their first game last year, and it might well happen again this year. I guess it is just one of those realities where you're lucky to have games and everybody's a club player, and there should be a vibrant club scene once again this autumn.
Yeah, I suppose it. For me, the club game is, I suppose, the priority, because the vast majority of our members play there. But inter-county seasons are very, very important in terms of player development and, you know, even recruitment and retention of players. We need that showcase at the top. I mean, if you're an inter-county coach at the minute, it's hugely frustrating, because going into the championship last year, the reality was that you weren't going to be able to make much progress with the team. That roughly where teams were when cessation came last spring was roughly where they were going to be. There wasn't going to be an opportunity to really coach and develop a team and make ground. And the reality is, you know, it's going to be same, you know, because nobody has going to have had the opportunity to develop and change what they do. So playing patterns, style of play, none of that's going to have changed now over the course of two, and you could argue three seasons by the time we get to the end of 2021. So, yes, it's great to have the games. The competitions are very important. But in terms of development of our game and our teams, I mean, they're going to have stood still for 2 years now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the coming months anyway. Aidan O'Rourke, former Armagh footballer and current sports performance manager at Queen's University Belfast. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks, lads.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.